Well, Jamie, we're here to do Click 210, the final episode of Better Call Saul.
That's correct.
What did you think of it?
All right. I liked it better than the season ender of last season. and I thought it was pretty good. There were some parts that I loved, and there were some parts that I didn't.
I hated it. There were also some, I agree that some parts, some parts I loved and
really?
Some parts I hated. Well, I didn't like it, Jamie. I didn't like it because it took too much real estate from the finale to devote it to Chuck. I didn't want to see this much about Chuck.
Well, okay, so I'm with you on that one. It was just way too much Chuck. I was bothered by it. And those are the parts I didn't like.
And then there was some unbelievable stuff, too, I kind of thought. You know, I don't know. We'll go through it and we'll figure it out.
Okay.
I heard an interesting comment from somebody, I read it somewhere, that Jimmy's made, maybe Seppenwall, Jimmy's made it his job to protect his brother from the world, while Chuck has made it his job to protect the world from Jimmy.
That's interesting.
Think about it. Everyone's normal in the world, like, hey, we're going to do an EKG to help you out. No, it's going to kill me. And then he's got, you know, Chuck thinks he's the chimp with a machine gun lawyer that he's got to stop at all costs to keep him from unleashing his legal torrents upon the world.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. It's a nice juxtaposition.
It was an interesting opening scene where they're at their mother's dying side bedside and not Chuck's dying bedside.
Right. That was cool. It was cool the way that they kind of covered it up so you wouldn't know. You know, they had the nurse standing in front of Chuck.
Another thing, Jamie, that tells me I didn't like this episode so much because I didn't take very many notes. It's like, oh, here's Chuck again. Nothing to write here. Nothing to make note of here. Because it really was like that, you know, I mean, the parts with Mike and the sniper rifle were fantastic.
Yeah, I loved those. They were so good. And I'll ask you later. I'm sure you'll ask me what you thought about a certain part of one of the scenes with Mike. But we'll save it.
So with their mother at her dying side, I thought, this what a perfect way to die, Jamie, if you're the mother. With a couple slight changes, maybe. It would have been an ideal way to die, to hear your... To hear your two sons reminiscing about things. I mean, they were picking on each other and picking on bad things. But what if you were just barely floating in and out of consciousness and you heard your two sons, like, remember this time when we did this back in Joliet and did that? I mean, if it was a little bit friendlier, it would have been a perfect way to die, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that would be a warm, wonderful memory.
Not much to remember, but yeah. Yeah, last thought, final thought. Like, they're living on. I've reached my time, but they're living on, and they're going to continue on. And
yeah.
So Chuck, Jimmy goes out to get some food, and Chuck is there when his mother's last words come from her. And she says, Jimmy. And then she dies. And then Chuck keeps those last words from Jimmy.
Yeah.
Which was freaking inexcusable. That's the worst thing Chuck has ever done.
Okay, so here's the thing. Devil's advocate. Well, you know, asshole's advocate. So Chuck is sitting there in the chair after Jimmy just skates on out to go get a sandwich. And he breaks down crying because it's his mom and his mom's dying. And then she comes to, and he's thinking, oh, here's my moment. You know, I'm going to tell my mom I love her. I'm here for her, you know. As no, mom, this is Chuck. Jimmy? No, mom, this is Chuck. Jimmy? It's awful.
Well, it's awful, but it tells the story. She really had way more affection for Jimmy. Even though Chuck's the perfect, you know, the perfect performer, the A+ student, the legal genius, she loved Jimmy more than Chuck.
Well, I mean, okay, so, yeah, it seems that way. But, I mean, that's heartbreaking.
Well, he there's probably a reason she loves Jimmy more than Chuck. And I think we have seen evidence of those reasons.
I don't know, because I'm kind of the opinion that Jimmy kind of turned Chuck into who he is, as much as Chuck turned Jimmy into who he is, you know? And I don't know. I mean, I see it a little differently, because if you think about that episode back earlier where we saw the flashback to Jimmy's childhood when he was in the store with his dad, and he had that moment where he was just like, forget it, I'm not going to be the good guy. I'm not going to be the sheep, I'm going to be the wolf, right? And then he decides to start stealing his dad's money. You know, that was, I think, his first bad turn.
He was trying to protect his father, though.
He was.
You could think of a wolf. You could think of it this way, that the wolf is a better protector than the sheep. It's better to be the wolf, whether you got good or bad intentions.
But his dad, he wasn't protecting his dad after that.
We don't know that.
We do, because he started stealing from him.
We don't know that, Jamie. We saw him take those $8. But we don't know if that was a momentary lapse. Like, okay, this guy has convinced me it's better to just take the money. We don't know that he really took the $14,000 that Chuck claims he did.
We don't know that, but I would be willing to say that the story is more true than skewed. I mean, just based on everything that we know, you know, and we saw Jimmy make the decision to start stealing, right? So I just think that it's possible that he was the catalyst to this terrible relationship the two of them have. But regardless, Chuck is awful to Jimmy. I mean, he's really, really awful in a way that is more unforgivable than the things that Jimmy has done to Chuck, in my opinion. So I think you're right. I think that, you know, that Chuck is the bad guy in this picture, even though the stuff Jimmy does is horrible.
Yeah, I don't know that there's a good guy or a bad guy. I just think Chuck has a powerful weakness that is his ego, that he cannot be second place behind Jimmy. And when he is, it just kills him. It gets to him really, really, really powerfully.
Yeah, I don't know. You're right. He has a huge ego. But I think that there's something else there. There's a woundedness of Chuck, which is, I think, what we witnessed. You know, like when his mother woke up and called out for Jimmy instead of him, and she wouldn't even acknowledge that Chuck was there. He went cold. You know, the second she did that and then died, all the emotion left him. You'll notice. And when the nurse came in, he said, "Is that it?" I mean, he was just done. You know?
Yeah, I don't even know that she woke up so much as she uttered a couple words.
Well, I mean, whatever it was for him, like his perception of that was that, you know, those were her last words. She called out for Jimmy, didn't even recognize him. And, you know, and I think that was like the last straw for him. And that's why, you know, he didn't tell Jimmy, and he's like, okay, I'm not going to give him an inch. He's already taken.
That's an ego thing. That's an unkind thing. Instead of letting your brother have the kindness that, yeah, she mentioned your name. That's a pretty nice thing to do for your brother. Tell him that. So she didn't mention your name. So what? I mean, that you got to deal with that. You got to manage that and get over it.
Well, I don't think he's willing to do that.
No,
I think
of course not. He's weak. That's his flaw.
Well, okay. But you can look at it a little differently. You can look at it as it being that Chuck has been through so much, and he feels...
What's he been through?
Well, all the stuff that Jimmy does, because he takes all that stuff personally. He takes it as...
Well, that's him taking it... That's my whole point. He takes it in a way that's damaging to him. It's not so much Jimmy being damaging to him. He got Jimmy out of trouble, and Jimmy's his little brother, always kind of screwing up, and he helps him out, and then he becomes a lawyer, which is to Chuck is the sacred profession, which is a big sin, I think, to Chuck. You can't be a lawyer. You didn't earn it. You got the cheap ass, you know, degree from mail order. It's a weakness in Chuck. It's more than an evil done by Jimmy.
Well, okay. So
we can see it differently. I just see it that way. I see Chuck as a very, very weak person.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I think in a lot of ways, they're both weak, but they're weak in different ways. And I think they're both really strong, but strong in different ways. But I understand Chuck's feelings and actions, you know, in what he did. Now, whether I like him or agree with him, like, that's a whole different thing, because I can't stand him and I disagree with most of what he does. But I understand that feeling of, like, well, here I am, you know, I'm awesome, and you, whoever the you is, won't recognize it because you're concentrating on this person.
Well, the way you say that, that actually sounds healthy. Here I am, I'm awesome, you are whatever you are. That's how people, I think, should be. You know, I am what I am, and you can be whoever you are, and I'm not going to let who you are affect me. If I do, then I have a weakness that isn't really your fault.
Well, I mean, yes, but that being in that position and being a person who tries so hard and you just want your family to recognize you, or you just want your, you know, the people in your social circle or your spouse or somebody to recognize, you know, your virtues, you know, and then having them not do it, that's got to be frustrating.
Oh, I'm sure it's frustrating, but I also think it's an inappropriate focus of your attention to want so much approval from other people that it's damaging to you when you don't get it.
Okay, so, but let's think of it this way. What if it's not that he wants their approval? What if it's that he wants them to try to recognize, like, all right, you know, this dude is not who you think he is? Because I think that's a lot of what his pain and his problem is that nobody gets that Jimmy is, you know, not as good as he is in his eyes.
You're worrying about somebody else, though, when you should be just worrying about yourself. For Chuck to bear pain because of that view of Jimmy being that way, that's very unhealthy.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is, and it's probably made him sick. But I think that's what people do when they're in unhealthy relationships. And I think that if anybody on television has an unhealthy relationship, it's Jimmy and Chuck.
Okay. Well, we're one sentence into this podcast, Jamie. We've gone for 15 minutes. But yeah, that's up right up to the credits. The credits are the coffee cup falling and breaking. I don't think we've seen that one yet.
I know, I don't think so.
And we come back to real time. Jimmy's helping Chuck now from across the street. He decides to give up his vantage point of hiding and go in and help him in the copy shop. And we get these cool upside down tracking shots of Chuck's perspective as he's rolled on the stretcher into the hospital.
Right.
And all the associated electronics around him.
Well, I'll tell you this. I'll tell you something. In that scene, the scene where he's in the print shop before the ambulance comes and takes him away, and Jimmy is talking to him and trying to bring him to. And Chuck looks at Jimmy, and I swear to you, exactly what I thought. I thought he's going to open up his mouth and say, "How did you get here so fast?" You know, he was going to be skeptical, even in the condition that he was in, being on the floor after knocking his head so hard and being passed out, instead of just letting somebody take care of him. That was going to be the first thing in his mind. And he didn't say it then when he was on the floor, but he said it later.
Right. Well, he's thinking it. He's really not as hurt as everyone thought he was, for one thing. He bumped his head and he got a cut on his head, and maybe he did something to his neck, but he didn't really damage his brain or anything.
Well, no.
He's relatively conscious and able to think those thoughts, if that's what he wanted to think.
Well, yeah, no, I think he was definitely thinking it. I don't think he could say it then because he was, you know, hurt and freaked out. But if he had been able to speak at that moment, I think he definitely, you know, would have said something to him, because that's, I mean, he's obsessed.
So too long, though, Jamie. I don't care about Chuck. I didn't want to see another scene of him rolling through the hospital, even though it was kind of cool to see the stretcher perspective. It was just too much Chuck, I thought. Interesting, though, on the way they edited this episode, there were slow credits, because more credits rolled after the scene as the doctor came in.
Right.
Dr. Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she was in season one, and she knows Chuck's affliction with this electronics.
Right.
So she knows it's kind of a hinky psychosomatic thing.
Right.
And she also knows a judge, Jamie, who will provide temporary emergency guardianship to get his ass into the EKG and get him checked out.
Exactly.
And now this is where Ernesto lies for Jimmy, where you were saying Chuck says, how'd you get here so fast? And Ernesto says he called him.
Yeah.
Pretty good of old Ernesto there. Ernesto misses the mailroom, and he's Jimmy's friend, and he liked Jimmy more than Chuck.
I thought that was so funny, you know, because when Ernie said, I called him, I was like, what? What's the angle? And then I started thinking, maybe he did call him and I just don't remember. And then out in the hallway when Jimmy asked him about it, what do you call it? And Ernie answered him. And then he started walking away. He's like, I missed the mailroom. I burst out laughing. I had to play it back because I couldn't pick up what he said the first time. But I really liked it.
Yeah, there were a couple things I missed the first time on this episode. But Ernesto doesn't seem like the type of person who would lie, even to cause a good thing to happen. It just doesn't seem like he would propagate a lie.
Well, I mean, so you know what he said. And it was, I mean, it actually was really alarming because he said, yeah, Jimmy, I lied because your brother, man, he seems like he's really out to get you. And it, you know, he's like, you're my friend. I think Ernie is concerned about Jimmy.
Yeah. So if Ernie knows that Chuck's out to get him, that's really bad. I mean, that means he really is clearly out to get him.
That's correct. And that, you know, and that's what I think should have been Jimmy's, you know, alarm. Like it should have been his moment of thinking, like, I need to really protect myself.
Well, I think he probably already knows that.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't know it well enough. Because he spoke freely in front of Chuck after all that stuff that Chuck did. I mean, that to me was a moment that, like, you don't go into your brother's house who is, like, that angry with you and that much out to get you and then just confess to a felony.
That's why I thought that scene was somewhat unbelievable, because I do think that he knows Chuck's kind of after him, out to get him.
Well, yeah, I mean, and then, you know, he just, I don't know, it was just, to me that was bad.
All right, so next scene, Jamie, we see the driver, they're taking the driver, Nacho and Arturo, taking the driver to his execution. I didn't realize that was the driver of the ice cream truck.
Yeah. Okay. So for a moment, I thought that they had gone back in time and that this was the Good Samaritan, right? And I was thinking that looks like the driver though. But I just couldn't make sense out of it. And then I was thinking, what the heck, whatever happened last week, Mike knows about it because he saw it, you know, so when Nacho told him, he should have been surprised. But then it started to dawn on me, no, this is the driver. This is actually the driver.
Yeah, and he had the same kind of gray and black checkered shirt on and the grayish beard.
Yeah, I didn't even notice that stuff. Like, it didn't even, like, the blue jean jacket hit me, but, like, the rest of it didn't. But I guess what we really should have known would make him the driver was that electrical tape, like the way that he was bound, because that was Mike's work.
Duct tape, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and interesting also little scene about this, as Arturo opens the gate, Nacho looks at the camera or kind of looks out the window of the van, the Scooby-Doo van. And he looks really, I don't know if this is a good idea. I don't like this. Like, we're killing one of our own men to clean up a loose end.
Yeah, I think Nacho is not happy with this whole situation. I think Nacho is a lot more civilized than his compatriots.
He's a good guy criminal.
Kind of, sort of. And, you know, I wanted to tell you, when we were talking about Michael Mando a couple of podcast episodes ago, and talking about how intelligent he is, you know, like away from the show, I didn't have the presence of mind to mention it when you said that on the podcast, but I wanted to say, like, to my mind, he is intelligent and well-spoken and thoughtful, like, you know, reflective, you know, on the show as a character. Like, I think that he's probably the most reasonable and intelligent member of that family that I've, you know, come across.
Kind of like Nodos.
Ah.
No, just kidding. Yeah, he's smart. He's sensitive. He sees what they're doing, and he's like, I don't like this. It's not right. You know, he's reluctant to go through that gate because he knows they're sealing that guy's doom.
Well, yes, and you know he didn't like it anyway because of the way that he said it. Remember the way he delivered that line, when he told Mike that they shot that Good Samaritan in the face. You know,
Hector shot him in the face.
That Hector shot him in the face. That, to me, that one, the way he delivered that line, you could tell he didn't like what happened.
Yeah, he's disgusted by it.
It seems.
And it's very important to say that he doesn't say, we shot him. Hector shot him in the face.
Right.
Didn't just shoot him and eliminate him. Hector shot him in the face. Hector shot him in a bad place. You know, he was disgusted with it.
Yeah.
All right. If we didn't see enough Chuck, Jamie, we go back to Chuck in the hospital with Dr. Cruz. I don't know. I thought it was a shame to waste all this time on Chuck in this final hour when there's, I mean, it seemed like it was teed up to be really good. And we get it. You know, we get it. Chuck's in the hospital. Kim comes in to meet Jimmy. He wants her to work to take away the feeling of the hospital. He wants her to do her legal work. And then his commercial comes on.
Yeah.
And his commercial comes on, and it's the most American commercial you've ever seen. It's got tractors and rockets and knitting and flags. and it's on two monitors in the waiting room. One is in front of Kim and one is behind her. So we can see her face as they show her face in the monitor behind her. And she's just gleaming. She's so proud of Jimmy.
Yeah, and she's like, you make good commercials. She's all happy. And I thought it was so cute. I love the catch, the line, you know, that, what was it that, what is it called, Jimmy?
Gimme Jimmy. Moxie is in short supply these days.
Right, Moxie. Yeah, I really liked it.
So the doctor comes out, Chuck's okay, his head's okay, his heart's okay. Jimmy has a stress-related syncope, a panic attack.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a complication. He's now on a self-induced catatonia. And he'll go, she thinks he'll come out of it in time because she's known him from past episodes with him. And Jimmy sits and waits with him.
Yep.
All right, now we get to some good stuff here. Mike with Lawson. Jim Beaver as Lawson is awesome.
Yes, he is.
They set up the sniper rifle, that one that Mike didn't want to buy a couple episodes ago. And he buys the rifle and the 168-grain bullets. Only one box, that's all I need. On the house, by the way, and then Lawson wiped his fingerprints off the barrel of the gun.
No offense.
Yeah, none intended. Or none taken.
Right.
Pretty awesome seeing these two together.
Oh yeah, excellent. That I really like that guy. What's his name again? The actor?
Jim Beaver.
Jim Beaver. Yeah, I really like him as Lawson. He is really good. I'd like to see more of him in the series.
And then they show some cool time lapse as Chuck's in the hospital. I guess it's the night, evening and night and morning. He comes out of his catatonia. Jimmy's sitting by his side. He was asleep for 20 hours. And Chuck wakes up as sarcastic and critical of Jimmy as ever. Doesn't miss a beat. Jimmy takes him home and Chuck just wants to be left alone.
That's right.
So this is the other thing I missed on the first watch, Jamie. Chuck cooking up his scheme.
Oh, yeah.
He goes out into the garage, and I didn't understand it at the time, but he's looking for that tape recorder.
Yes, he is.
So we know that he's plotting this all out way ahead of time.
That's right.
And they don't really show the tape recorder. They just kind of show him fishing around from that upside down view. You know, some sort of box of electronics where he probably thought, I'll never go in this garage to look at this electronics again. And he uses a stick to poke around in there.
Right.
But that was the tape recorder.
That's right. And when he went in there, I was thinking three different things are possible here. Either Chuck is not ill, and they're going to reveal some sort of crazy plot that nobody saw coming, or Chuck is about to kill himself. And when I saw that box full of things that, you know, connected to electricity, I was like, oh, maybe. And then when he fished out the one thing we couldn't see from that camera angle, that patented camera angle, I was like, oh, okay, he's up to something.
Yeah, he's scheming something.
Yep.
So we get the payoff with Mike and his rifle now in the desert. He's got a station wagon. He's got access to a lot of different types of cars.
Well, you know, they talked about that. I think it was, it was Nacho who mentioned that idea to Mike when they were getting ready, when he wanted Mike to kill Tuco. Mike said, what about my car? My car will be recognized. And Nacho said something like, go get a junk car at the junkyard or something like that.
A beater. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting that Mike basically took Nacho up on his suggestion, you know, in order to go out there and infiltrate his crew. But that was the coolest scene, I think, I've seen in this series so far this season, and it made me realize that Mike is just, this show would not be the same without him. I almost feel like he's also a main character in this series. I love his storyline. I like it even better than I like Jimmy's storyline.
Well, Seppenwall says that they weren't sure how fast to dive into Saul, turn Jimmy into Saul, because it was so fun having Jimmy around. Uh-huh. And having Mike around allows them to have their cake and eat it too. Because Mike can deal with all the nasty criminal stuff while Jimmy does the sweet and sorry Chuck and Kim and romantic stuff and, you know, growing into his legal profession. Meanwhile, Mike's on the flip side dealing with the Salamancas, and it's like down and dirty. So there's really two shows here. It's the Mike show and the Jimmy show.
I agree with you. And I love the Mike show. I like it better than I like the Jimmy show, actually. And that was fantastic. I really, really loved seeing Mike out there in, you know, the nature and you know, laying there in his camo. And it was just fantastic. And I know Jonathan Banks had to love doing that scene. Well, okay. So unless he was complaining because he hates to be physically uncomfortable.
No, he loved it. This is Vince Gilligan's direction and him setting up that rifle. And so many long, slow, quiet shots of the rifle through the scope and then behind Mike, like from behind his ear, looking at the back of his head and what he's seeing with the rifle. And then the quick flip to Hector and Nacho and getting their quick sound bite of what they would hear. By the way, Mike is a kilometer away, Jamie. That's click. Right. Click is a kilometer. And that's how far away he is. That's how long the shot has to be.
That's fantastic. How did you reason that out?
I thought that's what it was because the way they spelled it. And that's what in World War II. And probably other later wars. That's what they would call a kilometer in the European theater.
That's so fantastic. That's so fantastic. And you know, and it had to. Oh gosh. Well, okay. So it had to do with the potential of Mike pulling the trigger on the gun too, right? And it also had to do with Chuck turning off the tape recorder. Click.
Maybe, but with the K in the front, I think it's the kilometer.
No, it is. I'm just saying that word can be understood in more ways. If you think about it as, what is that, a homophone? Is that what that's called?
I don't know. Where it sounds the same and means two different things.
Uh-huh.
I think this scene with the rifle, though, explains a lot. Although it confused me at first, because I thought when Mike was watching in the earlier scene, watching the driver being taken through the gate, I thought he was going to maybe try to save that guy. Like, I don't want another guy dying on my behalf, because technically that driver got killed because of Mike.
That's right.
So I thought, well, he doesn't have time to do this, though. He goes off and meets Lawson and gets a little training and sets up the scope. And meanwhile, who knows when they're going to kill this guy, the driver, right? This is later when he comes back to their site. But I don't think that he had that in mind. I think all he wanted to do was kill Hector.
Yes, I think he wanted to kill Hector. Yeah, for sure.
He's not really trying to save the truck driver.
Oh, that didn't enter my mind. Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I don't think he wanted to see the truck driver die, but I don't think that was his aim. I don't think he was trying to save him. I think he wanted to kill Hector.
He may not even have known the truck driver was in the back of that van. He was just following Nacho.
Well, I would imagine that. Yeah, unless he was watching them from, you know, some other, you know, distance and space that we didn't see happen, then, you know, he was just, you know, trying to get what he needed done.
So we hear the Mike hears the crickets, and that's what we hear, crickets kind of building up really suspensefully. And then we hear Hector's perspective and the truck driver screaming, which seemed a little bit out of character. That truck driver seemed like kind of a tough guy for him to be screaming.
Oh, well, I think he knew that he was going to lose his life. I think because his muffled words, I thought I worked out him screaming, "Don't kill me."
Well, probably. I mean, does it matter?
Well, no, but I'm saying, like, that's why he was screaming, because he was on the moment, like, he thought they were going to kill him, which is exactly what they did.
Sure.
So you'd probably be screaming, too.
I don't think so.
Okay.
What good's it going to do? I mean, who knows what the hell you're going to do in that situation, but Nacho obscures Mike's line of sight on Hector, though, stands right in front of him. Although Mike could have shot both of them with the one bullet.
You know what? I wonder. No, there's no way he would do that, though.
Right.
He wouldn't kill Nacho.
But the bullet would have effectively gone through both of them.
It kind of makes me wonder if Nacho did that on purpose. If Nacho knew that Mike was out there because someone let him know that Mike was out there, whoever it was who left the note. But did you notice when he was out there, when Mike was out there on that rock, the crickets were going, and then suddenly they just fell silent?
Yeah, that's because somebody probably walked up and put the note.
That's right. Yeah, but that was so cool, because when they stopped, it's almost like Mike didn't notice, because he didn't turn around.
Right, not until he hears the horn.
Right.
So I think the kilometer is important, Jamie, because it's, for one thing, I thought, some people said, okay, where's the suspense here? We know Hector's alive later on. I don't know if we know much about Nacho later on, but we know Hector's alive. But I thought this could still be suspenseful, because when he was taking those shots with Lawson to practice, he missed the first one because of the wind. And right. I was thinking, well, what if he wings Hector and that's the cause of his state in the wheelchair?
Well, no, because we know he had a stroke. Like, we know that in Breaking Bad. Like, that's what put him in the wheelchair. But
I don't know that. How do you know that?
Because I watched it. We hear, I think it's Hank who says it in one of his police meetings.
Yeah, but Hank says it sarcastically, like stroked out old man.
No. That's what happened to him. He wasn't being like clever or anything about it. That's really what happened to Hector. He had a stroke.
Well, I don't remember that. I don't remember that being that clearly definite.
Okay. Well, I do, though.
I can tell you do. but anyway, I thought Mike might wing Hector, and that would be the problem that he has. But he never gets a shot off. And also the important part about the kilometer being farther away, like a kilometer away, is the horn. I thought, well, okay, these guys are going to hear this freaking horn and just go up and catch Mike.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that wasn't the only reason for it to be suspenseful. I thought it was suspenseful because you don't know what is going to happen out there. Like, who might come out of that building? Like, might, exactly what you said, might Mike just take a shot and hit the wrong person? You know, would somebody come up behind Mike? There were just so many possibilities. So, I mean, I don't think that that scene was unsuspenseful in any way.
I don't think it was unsuspenseful in any way either. I just think it was important that he was far away because that's how the horn could go off and they didn't even hear it in that cabin. Also, was that cabin, was that the cabin Tuco took Walt and Jesse to?
Now let me think for a second. Because it really could be, and I think it was actually, because there was that big window, and that's the window, I think, that Tuco was pointing the machine gun out and shooting at cows. And there's that back door, or the front door, whichever door that was, that would have been the door to the house. And I think that was, yeah, you know what, Mike, I think that might be that house.
It doesn't really matter. I just, it'd be curious if it was. And so the gate must be the border of Mexico and New Mexico, the gate they went through.
Oh, I don't know.
Because I think the house was in Mexico, right?
Yeah, it was.
So they didn't go very far. They went from New Mexico into Mexico. That probably was the gate.
Well, why would there be a gate between New Mexico and Mexico?
Because it's border.
Because it's a border, but no, man.
It's probably somebody's property. It's probably somebody's driveway or
street. Yeah, well, that's what I would have thought, that the gate is just like fencing off that land that Tio lives on.
Well, if the gate isn't the border of New Mexico and Mexico, somewhere along the way they cross the border, if they're in Mexico. It just would make sense that the gate was the border. So we hear the horn. Mike goes back, suspicious, holds his gun, his handgun, to see who it is or what it is. Finds a branch holding the horn on and the little card that says don't. So, Jamie, who do you think wrote the card?
Gus.
Absolutely, it was Gus.
Yeah.
Or an agent of Gus.
The reason I think that is because, well, yes, an agent of Gus, but Gus, you know what I mean? The reason I think that is because that's his way. Like, that, there is no possible way that anybody else did this, because he's the dude that's like, you know, makes stuff happen without being there. And he's silent and, you know, he's very, he wants to go unnoticed. He hides in plain sight. So, you know, I think that's a perfect way for him to get a message across.
He's also given warnings like this before. He gave the cousins the Poyos warning on their phone when they were sitting with the axe on Walt's bed waiting for him to come out of the shower.
That's right.
And he also warned Hank. I think that was Gus who warned Hank when the 308, when they were going to come and shoot him.
Yeah, no, it was Gus. It actually was. And it comes out later after Walt realizes, you know, and he is revealed to Gus at the hospital as being Hank's brother-in-law. And then, you know, he knows he has to go to Gus and tell him that, that, you know, he's not going to give him any problems. He knows that Gus is the one that did this, but he's not going to give him any problems because he has respect for him. And also because he warned his brother-in-law. So yeah, we know that it was him who did that.
Gus,
but yes, I mean, it was so cool. It was just so cool. And when I saw the note, I was like, dude.
Gus also has reason. He probably wanted to keep his relationship with the cartel intact. And then he probably wanted vengeance with Hector himself and not somebody else doing it.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
But the Gould and Gilligan did an interview with Rich Eisen, and they admitted that the Frings Back acronym got discovered way before they thought it would get discovered. Like, they thought they would have to reveal it.
What?
The if you take the first letter of each of the episodes, it spells out Frings Back.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So some Redditor found this and put it up on Reddit, and so everybody knew it. And so Gilligan and Gould are like, shit, we were going to reveal this like in an interview after the season was over, but somebody frickin' found it. Uh-huh. So the first letter of every word spells out Frings Back.
Oh, that's so awesome.
And I don't know that they say in that interview with Rich Eisen that Gus was the one who left this card. They may not have been that explicit, but I just really think that this was Gus. So the people in this little scene are Nacho, Hector, Arturo, the cousins, and the driver. I don't know the driver's name. I tried to find it. Not that it matters, but I wanted to ask you this, Jamie. Arturo and Nacho are not Salamancos, are they? Salamancos?
Okay, so I think my thought was that Nacho
Varga is his name.
That's right. So I don't know if he's related. It just could be that he's a part of that gang. But I mean, I was just thinking absently that he was a Salamanca, or at least distantly related, but he might not be.
No, he's a Varga.
Well, no, I know that's his last name, but you know how you can have a different last name from your cousins.
Yeah, they may be cousins or related somehow. So go to Jimmy at the legal office. The legal office still does have that rainbow, Jamie. They did leave that rainbow on there.
I know. So weird.
Jimmy's running through his clients, the elder care people. And he gets word from Kim that Howard called and wants to talk to him about Chuck. Jimmy finds out Chuck's retiring, and he makes Kim get coffee and donuts for the people. Poor Kim, no matter where she goes, even on her own damn business, she's stuck getting coffee for people.
Right? And you saw her kind of balk at that. She was like, oh!
Jimmy drives his car over to Chuck's. Now, Jamie, let's talk about Jimmy's car. I don't know why we haven't talked about this yet. Jimmy's car, Jamie, is all yellow except for one door, which is red.
I mentioned that in the first podcast the premiere episode of the series.
Oh, well, good. You know, I might have been when I was zoning out your color theories.
Yeah. Well, you told me like a few episodes ago that you don't listen to most of what I say.
I know, but I listen to what Gilligan says. And when he said that red is criminality, then here this perfect symbol on Jimmy's car that he's 1/4 of his car now is red.
Yeah.
Anyway, it just struck me that was the case.
Yeah, I mean, that's when I saw that the first time. I was like, oh, yeah, they're going to do the color thing again. And then, you know, that season didn't have, or at least I didn't notice a whole lot of the color stuff. And so I kind of, you know, put it to sleep. But, yeah, that was originally what I thought was like, yeah, there's meaning to that. Because why would it just have a red door?
So Jimmy's partially criminal. Criminal lawyer. So he knocks and knocks until Chuck lets him in and finds out Chuck's gone bonkers with the Mylar and foil everywhere, or wants to appear to have gone bonkers at least. He says, you got a little project going on, huh, Chuck? And Chuck says, what I need is a proper Faraday cage. And Jamie, we saw a Faraday cage on our other podcast, the one I do with Michelle on Halt and Catch Fire. They built a Faraday cage.
I don't know what that is.
Do you ever? I would think you did with your computers and stuff. A Faraday cage is a box or a container that has a conductive material on its outer edges with electric charges going through it, which negate the electric charges inside the box.
Huh.
So you run electricity around the outer exterior, and it negates all the electricity inside.
Oh, okay.
That's pretty cool, though. Chuck wanted to do that with his whole house. Jimmy attempts to encourage Chuck to stop him from retiring. The law needs you. You're gonna die in court talking to JudgeBot 3000, which, by the way, runs on electricity.
Yeah.
And your life is the law, so it needs you.
Yeah.
And then Chuck fakes out, feigns shame and weakness from electricity, causing him to become addled and make mistakes, and I think he even says, I might as well just end it. Like, kill himself. And then Jimmy tells him the truth, and Chuck says, you just confessed to a felony. And Jamie, what's Chuck going to do with this tape now? Because some of this doesn't make any sense.
Oh, he's going to turn him into the police.
Yeah, but it violates multiple legal ethics, if not law itself. Mm-hmm. Also, the setup violated a lot of ethics. He made Jimmy think something under false circumstances with all this Mylar and crap. He was fraudulent in the way he set up this tape.
And he doesn't care because he was going to get a confession out of Jimmy no matter what it took.
Okay, so what good does it, what does it do? We know Jimmy's not in jail. We know he's not barred from being a lawyer, disbarred.
Well, okay, so but we don't know that he's not going to be in jail. He might go to jail. He might get arrested. He might have a trial. You know, it just depends on, you know, on what happens. But, you know, nobody said that he's going to jail forever. But what could happen as a result of this, I think, is open-ended. I think the possibilities are multiple. You know, and I don't believe that Chuck would hesitate. He is so angry. You know, and based on what Ernesto said, I wouldn't put it back past him.
I think this. I think it went out with a big whimper with this tape, though. This whole season was great up till this last episode.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't feel as bad about it as you do. I hated all the stuff with Chuck. I think they need to get rid of all that electricity stuff. It bugs me. It's not interesting. So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the worst thing Chuck could do is harm Jimmy and Kim, I think. Because if Jimmy goes to jail for a year or something, I mean, I guess that's bad, but we know he's going to recover from that. But it's probably going to be hard for him to recover from breaking up with Kim.
Well,
Kim was hardly in this episode at all, by the way.
And Howard had one scene and like four words, one line, which I thought was kind of funny. But yeah, she wasn't in there much, but it was because it was about so many other things. But I think if if Jimmy goes to jail, it won't be for long. He'll go to jail for a day or two and get out. I don't think he'll be in there for a while. But I did want to mention something, and now I thought of it, and now I lost the thought. There was something I was thinking. The Mylar. It's cool to me that Chuck is using that Mylar, and it didn't occur to me until you said what you said just now about it being Mylar, because in Breaking Bad, you know, Mike famously uses those Mylar balloons to short circuit the power lines, remember?
Which actually works, by the way, because some kid let a Mylar balloon go up near my house and hit the power line and zapped the power line. It did exactly what Mike's did. Yeah, the power line fell. It hit a car. The car caught on fire. The power lines fell across the street. The police had to stop traffic for like 5 hours while they disconnected the power. It caused all kinds of problems.
Whoa.
Because it's metal. It short circuits the two wires and it makes a short circuit connection.
Wow. Yeah, that's a crazy response. I would never have expected for like the car to catch on fire and stuff. That's wild. But yeah, I mean, that's a great connection. And I don't know that I would have made it if you hadn't just said that.
Yeah, I don't know what they use it for. They probably use it to insulate stuff. I guess probably camping gear and stuff. It's probably good. It's a good solar blanket for camping. It probably does keep you warm.
Probably.
I don't know though. But Chuck had long strips of it, big old long pieces of it in his house.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jamie, that's it. That's a wrap for Better Call Saul.
Well, yep, for this season.
Seems disappointing. It's just disappointing.
Well, I'm sorry that you're disappointed. I'm glad that I'm not as disappointed as I was last season because I was really upset at the end of the series. And I don't know what those guys are doing. I would think that they would not be aiming to upset their fans. But, you know, two seasons in a row, one of us is upset at the end of the season.
They say, Gilligan and Gould say they don't know where the season's going to go at the beginning of their writing of it.
That's true.
And I think they found that out with season one. They thought, okay, by the end of season one, Jimmy will be Saul and won't be into it. But they liked Jimmy so much, which I think is really cool writing. Like, they found out so much by watching Kim and Jimmy react with each other and interact with each other. They wanted to keep it going, so they backed away from it, and they kept the whole season two of Jimmy, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And then they interjected Mike and let Mike be the criminal, carry the criminal weight, which he did very well.
Oh, yeah. He's fantastic. I love Jonathan Banks. I love what he's eminently watchable, that dude. Like, his face and just, like, his presence, and I don't know, I love him.
He got a degree from the University of Indiana, some doctorship for, I don't know what, but on Talking Saul, they had him on there.
Wow.
So they're calling him Dr. Banks.
Oh, like an honorary?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
It had to be some sort of acting.
Probably.
I don't think they have degrees for hitmen.
Yeah, probably not.
All right, Jamie, what are you doing in the off season?
Well, I will be finishing recording some podcasts with you, and I don't know, summer. I'll probably take a vacation. I need one.
You gonna watch some Game of Thrones?
You know, I really need to catch up on it because I did not watch the last season, so I will probably do that. And I don't know, maybe you and I will find something else to podcast about.
Maybe. All right, Jamie, we'll sign off here, though, for Better Call Saul Season 2. And until Season 3, that's it.
All right, cool, Mike.
Bye.
Bye.